Dear God, our Heavenly Father, thank you for this chance that we have to get together and study with one another. We haven't had a men's meeting in a while, and it's good to be back having a men's meeting, or men's class. That's nice. Gives us a chance to perhaps speak differently than we would in a code environment. But it also gives us a chance to maybe focus on things that men teaching men, as the women get to in their class with women teaching women. It's a good thing, and we ask that you help us to make it a good thing. Bless us with wisdom and knowledge and patience and understanding and thoughtfulness and all the things that make a study successful. We send this prayer in your son's name. Amen.
Amen.
Don't step on Stan's phone.
Go ahead. Maybe I can do it.
That was like tossing off.
So very briefly, we haven't had one of these classes in a really long time. I want to remind people the point of this style of class is for us to study together. That's part of why I prefer us to be in a circle, because you know it's not like a lecture style thing or anything like that. Studying together like that, there are two main things you need. One is preparation, and the other is an open mind. We're here to have iron sharpen iron, and that means that we're going to be sharing knowledge and reasoning, which means you need to bring knowledge and reasoning so that you have something to share. A good way to determine if you've prepared is just, you know, what have you brought to talk about? Have you thought about the topic? How many passages have you brought? It's not like a competition. Don't be like leaning over. You only got 17. Well, look. You know, but if you brought like less than 5 today, then probably you didn't think about it very much to bring knowledge and reasoning to the discussion. So it's very important, because that's the best way for us to help one another, because it's an active class, not a passive class. It's not a lecture class, so despite this little setup, I'm not going to be lecturing. I'm not even going to be teaching, really. My role is to facilitate discussion. So I may cut someone off and try to get us back on topic and sideline something for us to get back to later or something like that. But by and large, my goal is to keep the peace and perhaps to interpret if people are talking past one another. Because all of us are teaching here, all of us are learning, and the other side of that is that with each of us bringing knowledge and reasoning, we all need to be ready to examine that knowledge and reasoning, right? And be like the noble Bereans. And be ready to examine what's brought forward to figure out what is true, and then be ready to apply those truths to our lives. And that's actually harder than it sounds, because that means you got to be thinking to yourself, do I have an open mind? Am I ready and willing to change my mind? And so that's actually the first question of the class, is are you ready and willing to change your mind? And there are no yes or no questions in this class. It's always yes or no and explain.
You want to show of hands?
No. That's like yes or no. I want somebody to talk about, like, what do you do to help yourself be ready to have an open mind? How do you prepare yourself to come into a class like this with an open mind? To be willing to change?
I think the first step is just the humility. Humble yourself. You know, make sure that you have that understanding that there are others that are smarter than you, which for me that's pretty
Josh,
easy. So,
just because in the circle there's no need to whisper.
Sorry.
you can look at the screen and see how loud you're being.
Yeah. Humility is important. And as I say, it's, you know, you got to understand there are others that have much more knowledge about it than you do. Even if you feel yourself an expert, there's always going to be somebody that knows more about it than you. And it's important to understand that that could be the case, and be ready to listen. And not just listen to the words, but actually hear them and process them. And you know, that's something, again, it comes back to being humble. And like I said, you know, for me that's pretty easy, because there are a lot of guys here smarter than me. And so, That's one thing I enjoy about these types of classes and these studies is you get to hear from others that you might not in a lecture style class. Or
I know for me, I never took it extraordinarily seriously until I started teaching an auditorium class and realized people were actually listening to me. And that was terrifying. Like, absolutely terrifying. I can remember texting my brother and going, I can actually sway opinion. I better be right. This is scary. And it helps. I'm sorry?
It didn't show.
He's saying the first time.
Yeah, just the first time. After that, it's all downhill from here. But just the realization of getting smacked in the face with humility, like you were talking about, was a very rude awakening. And realizing the need to really sit down and think about everything that I think. It's a little bit meta like that, but I'm why do I think what I think? And realizing that I don't even have the answers to that. So, like Josh is saying, I don't necessarily have the answers to anything else. I don't even know why I think what I think all the time.
It is an interesting trait to bring somebody to a conclusion when you can't remember how you got to the conclusion yourself.
Yeah.
I can remember a time a couple years ago where I had an idea in my head of why something was wrong. I knew it was wrong, and I had my own reasons for why it was wrong. And then I sat down and studied with a couple of ladies, and one of them was actually not even out of high school yet. She was kind of, she had her own questions and concerns, and she's like, okay, you know, tell me why you disagree with this, and I'll tell you why I disagree with it for my reasons. And after we got done talking 4 hours later, I realized they had a better argument than I did. And I was like, you know what? That makes more sense. It's more scripturally sound. It fits better. I like that better, you know? And so I had to change my mind on it.
So back to the question, though. Did you do anything prior to that such that you were receptive?
Well, I think the way it was approached for me was we agreed on the disagreement, but for different reasonings. If that makes any sense. We were aligned in our opposition to some doctrinal error that was being taught, but my stance on it was kind of weak, actually. And so we were already in agreement, but we just wanted to study it. So I was kind of already in the open minds of, well, we're not going to disagree after this study because we're in alignment, right? And so, but then as the study kept going, I was like, I realized more and more that I just didn't quite understand it fully, and that helps me to take it forward and go, you know what? I may not always understand exactly why anything's taught, and I need to make sure I'm asking questions, and I need to keep that open mind at all times for any situation.
It's kind of a nested situation. You can be right about something and be wrong about how you get there,
yep.
And so you're still underlyingly wrong. So Josh gave the example of humility. Other people know more about some things than you. God knows more than all of us. Odds are there's a truth in the Bible that absolutely no one in this room has figured out yet. And at some point, somebody may figure it out and be able to share it with the rest of us. There are always new truths to be gleaned.
Another thing that it sounds like Rick was mentioning was the aim of unity, or the assumption of unity at the end. That we want to agree. We want to understand it alike. And so coming into a study like that, saying, I want to understand it alike, should free up your mind to the possibility that you're going to end with a different mindset than you came in. Somebody has to. Right? I mean, if you're going to come into this and you have different stances, someone's got to change if you're going to attain unity. And the assumption is that, you know, maybe 50-50, maybe a little less, depending on how much gray matter you got. Might be you. Yeah.
All right, yeah, or you both change.
Yeah, or all above.
Because ultimately, we want to be aligned with God, where we find our unity. Anything else on that before we get into the study proper? So the first question in the study proper is, what are we here to study? Because odds are when we said, hey, we need to study something back, what was it, 4 months ago, 5 months ago, that not everyone's made it 5 months and still has the same idea in their head about what we're even trying to study.
See, now no one wants to go first.
I'll tell you right now, it doesn't matter where you start us, because what we're going to do after that is break it down, and then we'll build back up.
You say it just has the title of giving. I mean, that includes so many things.
Yeah, so giving.
Yep. Specifically the methodology of how we take up the monies given. That was certainly at least one of the starting points. And even before that, it was how do we teach on giving?
I didn't think it was more so much on the giving as the act of doing the collection. Not on the part of the giving, but more on the act of the collection, because the whole idea came up is doing it with the Lord's table, doing it separate from the Lord's Supper.
So. Right, but that was brought up because of assumption made that it was not a separate act of worship.
Right. But that's what I'm saying. It wasn't so much on the giving side, it was more on the collecting side. Like, how do we...
Yeah, collect. Yeah, I say giving, yes. Collection.
I think it led to that question about, like, since it was one of the acts of worship, does it have to fall in between the booking prayers specifically, or can it be a, thing that is... I'll just drop it in the box as you come in the front door.
Put it in the poor box on the way in.
That's what I said. Goes, oh, an alms for the poor box? I'm like, no.
Anything else on that?
I kind of imagine the Restoration Movement when the church came out of denominationalism back in the early 1800s. And I'm not real well read about that history. But I know they were very conscientious in what they did, but somehow it seems that it would only be natural for them to take out of the denominational churches they were in some of the practices that they were already doing. One would have been the contribution, the passing of the plate, for example. And it concerns me that sometimes in that, and maybe other practices that we're involved in, we make assumptions that something's okay without addressing it anew. And that's one of the things, for me, for being open-minded, is approach a subject as if it's brand new and you don't already have it figured out. Because we think we do, but maybe we don't. That's Justin's point a while ago. For example, we've already made an assumption. It's an act of worship. That's because that's what we've always been taught. Before we decide it's an act of worship, we've got to find what an act of worship is. So that we'll save that for later. But that's the kind of thing we're talking about here, I think.
Just to that point, I don't know if it matters or not, but I've always just kind of held to the thought that, and not saying that you were wrong, I'm just saying, like, think that some of those people, especially at that time, because they wanted to distance themselves so far from those other denominations that they probably were, I would think that they would be extra careful not to follow the traditions of men and make sure they had book, chapter, and verse for all the things that they were doing. Now, that doesn't mean that people had to slip back into some of those traditions because they were more convenient or whatever. The church down the road is doing it that way, so, you know, maybe we can get some more people that they think were cool.
Your voice isn't even showing up on there.
I talk quiet sometimes. Sorry.
I hesitate to bring this up with all the talk of starting anew, which I agree with entirely. However, I do want to put a word in for the scholarship and efforts that have been put into play by men, whether it be among ourselves or others who have studied this and studied it carefully through the ages, that we recognize that there is scholarship that exists. And there is, in other words, for just take as an example with regard to contribution being worship, as Dennis indicated, for an individual who has studied that and taken a position on it, he might not would consider that an assumption. Now, in order to take it anew, you have to say, okay, we're going to break everything down and we're not going to assume anything. But people who have studied it and have come to a settled conclusion on it, they've not assumed something. They have studied it to determine what the truth is. And we stand on the shoulder of solid men in the past who have written extensively and have argued the points, and there's nothing wrong with... In fact, I find it that if I find myself diverging from what people, brethren, good, faithful Christians who understand authority, understand God's Word, if I differ from them, I don't automatically assume that they were making assumptions or that they got it wrong or that they were prejudiced in some way or the other. It scares me when I think that I'm diverging in my thinking from what has been established views over the years. And I want to be careful not to think of myself too highly in that regard. That does not in any way set aside the necessity of being open-minded and re-examining what you've learned. I agree with that and strive to do that every day. But I tell you something, if I re-examine something and I find that I'm disagreeing with just about everybody else, it scares me to death. And I go to them and ask them, why am I disagreeing with you? So that I can get some understanding of what their actual views are. A lot of times, what we're assuming is that they miss something, when in reality, when you talk to them, they've got it down pat and they know exactly what they're talking about.
I think it's good to remember also at that point that God didn't make scriptures that were so overly complicated that we can't all understand it the same just by studying the scriptures even on our own. Every single person is going to understand every single thing, but I think that people try to overcomplicate things sometimes to their peril. Just my two cents.
The opposite problem. Yeah.
Do you hear what I said, Dick? No, you're looking really, like I just talked loud enough. I'm sorry.
I can see your lips moving. I mean, just.
I'll talk louder next time. Yeah, I apologize.
Put a little more volume like Stan does.
Yes, sir.
And that's for everybody, myself too. I talk low, and I'm talking loud. Sometimes you're not.
I get excited. My wife says I talk too loud sometimes, so I try to.
We also want to be careful not to just take these, put people on pedestals that have studied it for decades and they've got it right, so I just must align to them, because some, you know, they could be wrong too. So we've got to be careful to not just accept opinions, and so that's why we're doing this anew. We're looking at everything, and that helps us keep that open mind. Maybe they did get it right, and we may get in alignment with them, but maybe they missed something.
Yeah. Well, Stan did say it's when he's disagreeing with everybody that he's worried, not just one person.
That's true.
The Bereans were praised for being more noble than the Thessalonians because they didn't trust the words of an apostle of Christ. And he's the one who praised them. And that they went and discovered for themselves whether or not what he was saying was true. And if we should be that way about an apostle, we should do that about accepted doctrine.
I think it's the difference between ignoring and verifying.
Yes.
Sure.
So we shouldn't ignore them and start over, and I don't think that's really what you ever intended or anyone ever intended, but just we need to look at the arguments again and not just take them at face value.
So why was this topic suggested? What was the reason?
Well, I'll give you two answers.
Okay.
That's my second question. Why are we studying it?
Okay.
I think another thing real quick, though, on the other one, about we were talking about assumptions and things. I think it's real important not to assume that somebody has all of the basis or foundation that you have. Because like what Stan's talking about, when I've gone to people and said, hey, I had this thought, and they've said, well, I've already thought about that thought. We talked about it back in 53, and here's why, you know, we figured it out. It's like, yeah, I wasn't around then, man. He's like, well, I thought everybody knew, right? And they didn't, because it hadn't been talked about for like 25 years. And so making sure, that's why I said no matter where we start, we're going to break it down real fundamentally and build it back up. Because it's real easy to say something that you're like, all right, so everyone agrees this is true, and someone else to be quiet. Be like, man, I don't want to be the guy that says, I've never heard that, or I don't know that. And so I'm going to try to force people to explain such that everyone has a common understanding and foundation. So then the question, yeah, why are we studying it? So we're going to talk about the methodology, the act itself, the collecting, the giving, how do we teach it, the timing, how does it relate to tradition? Is it people being conscientious? Is it people clinging on to something because it's there? Is it some people clinging on to something because it's expedient? Or is it people doing something because that's how you have to do it? Or the alternative, we didn't really cover it, is did they swing the pendulum too hard the other way and be like, we're going to make sure we're not like that, so we're going to be like this, and we don't ever want to get anywhere close to that, so we're going to stay way over here. It's fine, but it's not necessary, right? Those are the two sides of the pendulum. So the question is, why are we studying it? What made us think, man, we need to talk about that?
Well, I think two reasons. First of all, I mean, we're called a unity, so you're not going to have that unity unless you talk about it and study it together, those topics that we, you know, possibly differ on some issues or have some different, you know, even, again, when you have the foundations are the same, maybe the application is a little bit different. And then here, there's also a unique reason. It's unique to some churches in that we don't have elders. And so since we as men are trying to make a collective decision on some of these things, it's even more important that we talk about it and study it and know where each other stands and try to come to that common agreement on whatever the issue might be, because that's going to make it that much easier to come to a consensus on that, you know, which is what we attempt to do in our meeting, our men's meetings, our business meetings, when we are making decisions about the practices of the congregation.
What else?
I think because we were so diversified in our ideas on when to put it or where to put it, when we were making those decisions before, it showed that we needed some common ground on this issue. Like, there was differing opinions that we needed to kind of study it out a little bit. That's kind of what I got out of the men's business meeting.
I feel like it was just options we were given, and it kind of devolved from there, not intentionally, but just because there was, because, I mean, in the end, we were like, oh, we really don't have a problem, okay? I mean, that doesn't mean you don't study it still. It just,
but maybe that's the whole question right there, is do we have a problem,
or create problems,
do we not?
Sometimes, just because we're... But I think sometimes when problems are created that we don't have, it's not necessarily a... It's not something wrong. It's just a symptom of a something that we're all trying to make ensure that we're doing everything right, and we're not... One, doing something wrong, which I don't believe that we are at all. And two, that we're not alienating another brother, you know, based on the decisions that have been made or being made. Or, of course, COVID kind of woke everybody up a little bit and made us realize that. And I was telling Janelle today that, you know, at the heart of all of it, even though, like, sometimes things got a little, you know, people had disagreements and stuff, I think the biggest thing why we have disagreements over things is because at the heart of it all, it seems like I can't think of one person here that is not overly concerned about making sure that, and I won't say the weaker brother, but I'll say like a brother who might have a different opinion, that we're not offending them, basically.
Well, I think that was the whole idea, wasn't it? Somebody brought up a concern to somebody, one of the men, about the way we were doing it, or in some of the children being confused, and so somebody brought up a concern, and
something like that.
And that's why we discussed changing it. Because, and you don't want to, since we don't have elders, we don't ever want to overlook a concern. If somebody has a concern or a question about something, we don't ever want to overlook it. So,
and that's what I was saying. I think
we don't want to just go back to that person and say, "Well, no, we're just keeping it this way."
Well,
why?
Well, because we are overly concerned, so it's a good thing, not a bad thing. I just think that we have to make sure that we're always looking at the big picture and not getting lost in the forest, kind of, you know. Sorry, I was talking quiet again.
So let me catch up with y'all. So what we've identified so far is the question of whether it should be set right from the Lord's Supper. Is that the only thing we've come up with, or is there more?
For the why?
Yeah, why we're studying. Are
I didn't even have that as a why.
Okay.
It's more why. That's more of like a conclusion you would draw later, potentially. Okay. Here are the six things I wrote down while y'all were talking. Because we're called to unity, so we should just want to have unity on everything. We're making collective decisions as the men, and those are easier to make if you come from a common understanding. Because there were obvious differences in understanding, because there's the question, do we have a problem? Anytime you go, do we have a problem? You probably want to talk about that. Because churches did new things during COVID. There were a lot of congregations around that did things they'd never done before with the collection during COVID. And that brought up questions. And then the fact that the children were not making the distinction in their mind that it was a separate act of worship. Is there anything else? Okay, so we got the what and the why.
So two things. Set up for the Lord's Supper or collecting outside the assembly, which is what we were doing in COVID, right?
Right.
Okay.
So let me actually put those in a different section. I'm going to put that in a questions to answer section. I'm thinking about where to begin. I think I'll start with listing some of the assumptions, and then we can kind of set those aside just so we can remember them. And then we can start breaking things down, getting to the little pieces, and then build it back up. So some of the things we've already stated were assumptions, which I want to be fair is not necessarily true, right? These could be reasoned opinions people have, not just assumptions, but things that were taken as possible assumptions, that it's an act of worship, that it needs to be in the assembly. The distinction between contribution and collection, and the timing requirement, which is to say that it's on the first day of the week. So those are all things that have been voiced as either assumptions or things about which there are disagreements. So when I was teaching the high school class on this, I broke it down into the idea of spending money. Because a lot of times when we talk about this, we say, all right, there are things that it's okay for the congregation to spend money on, and there are things that it's not okay for the congregation to spend money on, and then there are things that it's okay for us to spend money on as individuals, right? But what are all the categories? Like, if I was going to draw a Venn diagram of things you can spend money on, what would that Venn diagram look like?
I so badly want to ask the question, what's a Venn diagram, that I won't.
I think it's the two circles with a little, like, yeah. I'm in the middle, right?
Three circles. Yeah, I know it. I just wanted to ask. You were assuming we all knew what a Venn diagram
was. I was over here about to do it to you.
He doesn't know Venn diagram.
Do you want me to draw a Venn diagram?
No.
Venn diagram is when you're looking at multiple things and you're drawing them as groups of people or things in shape. So you could say, here are people that are socially awkward, and here are people that enjoy technology, and then the overlap of those two is nerds. If you have both of them, then you're a nerd or something like that. And so, for instance, an obvious question to ask is there anything that the church can spend money on that I'm not allowed to spend money on as an individual? So you're trying to figure out the overlaps and things like that. So what's the most basic overlap about, or not overlap, what's the most basic distinction about spending money?
AC.
Oh, sorry.
Yeah. What's the work of the church and what's not the work of the church? Is that what you're talking about? Like,
that is one. That's not the most basic.
What is authorized? What's unauthorized?
Yes, but very broadly.
Yes.
There are things we're allowed to spend money on and the things we're not allowed to spend money on. Like, you know, hiring hitmen. We're not allowed to spend money on that. It doesn't matter if it's the church or individuals. You're not allowed to go hire hitmen. So that's the depends on the situation. It's a separate class.
Can I
make a suggestion?
The work of the church. The evangelism, benevolence to the needy, and edify. That's the work of the church. Anything that we spend on that is all right. And sometimes it includes the secular things, like buying a lawnmower or a copier. But evangelism has to be done right, you know, like you had the missionary society, and now we they have a missionary society, but they don't call it that, but that's what it is, inclusivism and all that. And then the benevolence is just with the needy saints, of course, temporary need, we help out some, you know, but we don't roll in bed unless they need saints. And then the edify the saints, it's my Bible class, paying the preacher and sermons, and that's the work of the church. And you don't just spend a lot of money on first day contributions to entertain the members by having a meal that they pay, you know.
Pizza
Our
bar.
One church has a hot dog budget once a year. they have enough money there to get the hot dogs and Dr. Pepper, I guess. But, so it's, to me, it's pretty clear, you know, just if they fit in any of those things, and it's done scripturally, we can spend the money on it.
And I get that?
The first day of the week contribution. And anything that's done is like the gymnasium, and I'll take money for that, actually robbing God, you know.
I get what you're saying, but you're trying to build like the third story of the house and we haven't built the foundation yet.
I heard it brought up and I couldn't hear it.
I get that. This is what were you going to say?
I was just going to suggest that this particular subject might be something we can bypass if we're focusing on the contribution itself, and we'll just take it for granted that we will only spend the Lord's money on things that are authorized.
Well, the reason I wanted to cover it first is because there's that distinction between the contribution and the collection. So we can fast forward a little bit if you want and maybe get into a meatier topic that I guarantee if I bring it up will eat up the next 24 minutes.
Well, we'll touch on that then, if that's okay with everybody else. What's the distinction between the contribution and collection?
Okay, so real quick, let's talk about the Venn diagram, just to be sure we got it.
Okay.
There's things no one's allowed to spend money on at all, right? There's things we're allowed to spend money on as individuals. There's things we're allowed to spend money on as groups, but not as the church. And there are things that the church is allowed to spend money on. So all of us could get together and buy a boat, but we can't say we're gathering money like they did in 1 Corinthians 16 and we're going to buy a boat, right? I guess unless you live in... No, I'm not going to get into one of Josh's asides.
Can you buy it under the church's tax-free shelter?
No, I'm kidding.
So I want to be clear. Not everyone agrees with what I just said. And that's the reason I wanted to cover it first. Because I don't know that everyone here agrees with what I just said. And if everyone doesn't agree with what I just said, it makes it hard to go to the next point. the next point is talking about collection and contribution. And the reason I said the other day that the way it was phrased, using the word contribution, made an assumption that it was necessary to gather the money as a group. I'm going to go so far as to say ever. We can work forward from ever, but that's what the assumption is that there is ever a reason that we have to gather money together. And so when you're looking at the Venn diagram, if individually we're allowed to spend money on anything that the church is allowed to spend money on, then is there ever a reason we have to gather money as a contribution? Which, definition of contribution, putting funds towards a common fund. That's the easy definition. So is there ever a reason we need to do that?
There are certain costs that we as individuals can't afford, or even as a subgroup can't afford. We need the funds of the treasury to meet those needs. I couldn't pay Stan's salary.
Right.
Well, I think you're asking, is there like, you're saying, is there like special circumstances? Like, the thing that I think of when you say that is like a congregation, that obviously we're autonomous, but a congregation in Haiti gets hit by a hurricane and they're suffering, and it wouldn't be right for us to send them money directly from our coffers, so to speak. But we as individuals can help them individually, but sometimes we pull together as a group and send it, and that's really a facilitation, though, I think, to put it together. And I know there's places where they're okay with, like, depositing the money into the church's account and sending a check from the congregation, which I don't personally see a problem, but that's my so. However, I don't know if that's what you were getting at or not when you said contribution versus collection. Not exactly.
Like I said, I'm guiding the discussion. The discussion can go wherever it is. I'm not necessarily even trying to explain what I mean. I'm trying to explain what I've heard. Because when I hear things that are obvious disagreements, then I want to bring them up so they can be discussed, so they can come to common unity.
I've always used collection and contribution interchangeably as the act of worship that we're commanded to do. So.
Right.
So I would say 1 Corinthians 16:1 requires it.
Okay. Go
the
on.
Collection or the contribution?
Requires.
He's the one that's making that decision, not me.
Requires a collective fund.
That's what's being described in that list. Concerning the collection. So the collection is a collection, which is a common fund. For the saints, as I've given orders to the churches of Galatia, so you do also. Command.
What was the purpose for that collection?
Benevolence.
Okay.
But local, it is a command.
Or local or outside?
It is a command. In this case, it was foreign benevolence.
Okay. This is why I want the table.
But making that distinction, you said, is there ever a time? And so there's a time when it's required. You must do, or you do also. I think the King James Version reads it, you must do, but I may be wrong on that.
New King James says you must do also.
If we're trying to,
the New King James does. Wow, this version I've got is an early version. It's, and I read it correctly. It says, "As I have given orders to the churches of Galatia, so you do also."
And yours is New King James?
It's New King James, but it's a very early. There have been a couple of revisions where some slight changes since then.
Okay, so if we're talking about the distinction between contribution and collection, they're basically the same thing. We use different words. Contribution is what we all do as a group on Sunday morning when we're all assembled. A collection is something that might be done any other time. We need to collect money. Let's say we were a small group of 20 or 30 people. The treasury got depleted. And we had an immediate need. We couldn't wait to Sunday, or for 3 Sundays to get it paid. So we had an other than Sunday collection of the brethren to take care of that immediate need. That might not be that. I'm thinking that's a collection. Contribution then is off Sunday morning when we put something in place. Does that make sense?
It does. The thing that I can think of too, as far as the difference in a group of us collecting money outside of what we contribute on Sundays, is at times where there is a need that arises that the... Let me start right over clear. When we spend funds from the church treasury that comes from the contribution by the members on Sunday, it's something that also needs to be approved by the congregation. In other words, you know, if we had elders, if it was, you know, the way we have it, you know, the group of men coming to a consensus. And so there are times where that's not, like you know, Dennis mentioned, that because of the, we just don't have time to meet together, and members are willing to do it out of their pocket. Or there have been times where we've given, you know, benevolence, and maybe our budget for the benevolence, or whatever, for whatever reason, we're not, there's a need that arises that we've decided it's not going to come from the church treasury, and so we have gotten together, and I've done that several times, and had people send me money directly to send to brethren in need. Another, you know, situation that I'm thinking of that arises, although not very often, is someone will come in off the street asking for money, and in a desperate situation, and at times there are brethren that will give that person help, but that's obviously something that's not going to come from the contribution, because we can't verify whether they're a brother or sister in Christ, and we're only authorized to give from the church treasury to needy saints, and so that's a time where money might be collected among some individuals. But I'm the same. I've always used the collection contribution on Sunday, you know, interchangeably as far as the first day of the week contribution. If we're talking about just the act of getting money together, there, you know.
I think that goes to what Justin was talking about earlier, the separation of what the church could pay for and what we could pay for as a group. Like, as a group, we could all just collect money right now and go get a pizza and eat during this meeting. As a congregation, we can't do that. So I think that goes back to what Justin was talking about earlier, is, you know, the church could buy, as a congregation, we could pay for things, you know, separate, you know, the group, we could pay for things that the church can't pay for.
So I guess the question then is there a differentiation made in Scripture whether or not the contribution and collection are separate, or if they're referred to as being the same thing in Scripture?
Well, obviously, and the scripture that Stan just read, and they call it a collection. So I think the words are interchangeable, because you just have to be careful. I think you have to be careful when you use the words, how you, you know, the definition that you put
together. To contribute is to give. Mm-hmm. To collect is to put together. Mm-hmm. So you're collecting the contribution, if you want to make a distinction. But I don't know that the interactivity of the two words, that there's any parsing that need be. And when we call it a contribution, it is
a collection.
It is the collection that everyone added to. That's what I'm asking. I don't understand really the necessity of this. In fact, when Dennis made the suggestion that the contribution is the first day of the week stuff and the collection could be something outside of it, well, again, the text concerning the first day of the week that is mentioned in 1 Corinthians 16:1 does say collection. So that contribution is a collection, according to what the Scripture says. I'd be curious as to how many times the word contribution is used in Scripture. I don't have my thesaurus with me.
Oh, not
my
twice.
Concordance.
Is it 1 Corinthians 16:1 and 1 Corinthians 16:2?
Contribution?
The collection.
Yeah, collection, I know.
Oh, contribution? Yeah.
Contribution. When is that used? I mean, we're told to give and to give liberally. And
yeah, I don't.
And,
I think that's all, a...
But
I don't think it's actually used.
I would check on my phone, except... I'm recording it.
I do believe there is a distinction made between the local funds and the gifts that are mentioned in 1 Corinthians 16. Because in this particular context of 1 Corinthians 16, all of the references of giving were for the gift for Jerusalem. It had nothing to do with the local needs of that congregation. It was all for the outside benevolence in that context, and as well as 2 Corinthians 8 and 9, all of which were directed at their contribution for the collection, for the gift of Jerusalem. It was never for, not that it couldn't have been used for it, I'm not trying to say you couldn't do that, but I'm just trying to use the context as the context is, first, And the context that I read is it's for outside support. I don't see it being used locally. I think that may be a separate fund.
So you're saying that? So you're saying that command was to the individuals, not to the church as a whole?
No, it was. So
I'm just trying to understand.
1 Corinthians 16 is given to the church collective.
Right.
Now each individual was to contribute their individual amounts, and it was not commanded the amount, but given the inferences made from 1 Corinthians 16 and 2 Corinthians, the inferences made that the congregation had proclaimed a certain amount that they would give as a collective group, and that only could meet that with the individual contributions. And because they were falling behind, 1 Corinthians 16 and 2 Corinthians 8 and 9 were written to encourage them to meet that demand. But I don't see where, in those particular contexts, those collected funds were for local work, if that makes any sense. I'm not saying that you can't collect for local work. That's not what I'm saying. I'm saying these contexts don't necessarily apply to local benevolence.
I agree with Rick. I mean, we're talking the history of the passage, the context of the passage. They obviously were making a collection before that because they had needs that had to be meted before this.
Sure.
There was an extra collection for this, and it was earmarked. It was put in a bag by itself so that it was ready whenever the brother came to get it. Where we go beyond that, though, is where he commanded the Galatian brethren and the Corinthians brethren, is that now do we make that a commandment for the church universal everywhere for all time, that it has to be done the same way, whatever that same way is. They were already doing it, and they were probably doing the Lord's Day because that's when they met. But now it's been codified, as you were, if you would, so that now we have to do it this way. Because they were commanded, we're commanded.
And
so the question.
And I agree that it's an example, right?
Yeah.
Like, none of these passages were directly written to us. So yes, it applies to us, right? In turn, sort of, right? But we're not collecting for the gift to Jerusalem. That doesn't mean that there are not situations that come up where we need to send benevolence outside our local walls, right? Our local congregation, rather. And so this gives us principles that we can follow to ensure that we're doing it in an authorized manner, right? They were told to do it on the first day of the week. We can know that we're safe to collect for outside benevolence by doing it on the first day of the week. I can see it as an expedient as well to also give for the local work on the same day. And I think that's probably why it has been a part of a worship since, you know, as long as I can remember.
I'm feverishly writing down questions and things y'all are bringing up that we're not going to get to tonight. I did want a clarification on something you said. You were saying the difference between contribution and collection, and you said, you know, something comes up, some big something comes up, and we got to call everyone on a Tuesday and be like, hey, you know,
right.
Whatever, kidney transplant or something, we need money right now, something. Whatever it is.
Clarification?
But the way you phrased it sounded like that you were going to fund the treasury with that.
What I'm getting at is that, and I agree with what Stan said, what I'm talking about is the accommodative way we use the terms. When we say contribution, what we think of is passing the plate in the assembly, right? That's what we think of. A collection is when I call any number of y'all and say, we need to get some money together for this good purpose, or for this good work. So I'm collecting money for that.
Like for instance, when we collect for flowers for a funeral.
Exactly. The example I gave was a small congregation because it's more likely to come up in a small congregation, maybe 10, 15, 20 people in this congregation. They've got a treasury. They have a contribution on the Lord's Day morning in the assembly. But what happens? Do we have to wait to the next warrant a moratorium to meet the need if the treasury's depleted?
And that's what the question. And that's what I was trying to get back to.
Right.
Because there are certainly people who believe that's true. Like if you needed to get fake number $10,000 together and you only had $8,000 in the bank, they would say collecting money not on Sunday and then intermingling that money with the money that is collected on Sunday and using that towards a singular purpose is wrong.
Interesting. I've never heard that.
Because you didn't collect it on the first day of the week, per the example.
I know brethren that believe that they, even if they're out of town, they have to give their money to someone that's in the congregation so it makes it in the plate on Sunday.
Mm-hmm.
Or they don't believe that they can just double it up the next week or whatnot. They have to have it in the plate that Monday.
I've never heard that. So that's why the
Venn diagram we talked about a second ago is one of two, right? That was the Venn diagram on how can we spend money. When you get into this smaller part, there's the question of how we can collect money. And we've had people leave this congregation because of how we've collected money. I don't know if y'all are aware of that. But when we got insurance money for them tearing up our parking lot to go do gas wells or whatever in the world they were doing back there, we had somebody leave because they said, we can't accept that money. That is not a way that the church is allowed to raise money. Now, I'm not saying whether that's right or not. I'm saying that disagreements exist. And so when you're trying to come to unity, you've got to consider these things.
By the way, Romans 15:26, with regard to the Macedonian and Achaia contribution to the poor in Jerusalem, the word contribution was used, which parallels the Corinthians, 1 Corinthians 16.
What do you mean parallels?
Well, that's
saying because it was for the poor in Jerusalem also.
Yeah, it's the same
gift. It's the recipient of that gift, right?
Gotcha.
They're the recipient of the gift.
It's the same situation where those in Macedonia were doing it as well, and it's referred to there as a contribution.
Right. And that's one of those real generic Greek words too, right?
I'll have to
like it's look it up. Translated.
I thought I'd have my phone, but I don't.
Yeah, it's translated like fellowship and
if it's koinonia, that's
I'll look at it right now.
That may be it may be koinonia because it has
I forget what the other stuff is. All right, so
you brought up about that some left the west side because of they got money from the first day of the week.
Yeah,
and my understanding was that as far as the church got to be paying us for tearing up our parking lot, you know, but it was actually that they disagreed. To even get into a lease, you know, because they left before we got reimbursed for the
parking lot. Yeah, that could be a thing too.
Reimbursed for the parking lot. They left because we get an income from another source other than the first day of the week.
Yeah, that was definitely the first topic. So what he was saying was the mineral rights under the property, or is the church allowed to get money for the natural gas? Yes. That's under the property. And there was a disagreement about that. But that's a good example of one of those things that a bunch of people have never even thought about. Like, what? No, who cares, right? But then people care deeply.
I think deep down everybody just wants to do what's authorized. They just have a different way of getting to the conclusions that they get to. And so that's why we're trying to study to unity, to get to the same conclusion.
I would say I've heard people that were not okay with the church's funds being in an interest-bearing account in the bank.
Yeah. Yeah, that's another example.
Yeah.
And to be clear, one side of the danger is that you try to be so careful you cripple yourself. You can't, where you end up not being able to be a good steward of God's money, of everything's God's money, right? All your money is God's money. You can't be a good steward because you've so limited yourself in ways that God hasn't limited you. And so trying to figure out, you know, what does God say about it? What does God say about even having a treasury? Right? We haven't even gotten there yet. There are other questions. But I was trying to keep focused on the thing about collection and contribution. So I'll go ahead and tell you. I'll go ahead and tell you what some folks say is that the 1 Corinthians 16, 1 and 2 was not a common fund. That's what they're saying. They're saying the reason that this is described as a collection and it's not described the way the money is in, say, Acts 2 or Acts 4, where they had all things in common and they sold their houses and laid the money at the apostles' feet in one big pile or whatever. The reason it's not described like that is because that's not what's happening here. And when it says in verse 2, lay by him in store, and the fact that the him is it says, let each one of you lay by him in store. The reason there's a him instead of it just saying, let each one of you lay by in store, is because it's talking about an individual action. Or as it's translated in the New American Standard Bible, on the first day of every week, each one of you is to put aside and save. Which makes it sound even more individual. And so the obvious counterpoint to that is, but he said so that you don't got to gather up money when he gets there. And they said, yeah, so each individual doesn't have to gather up money when they get there. You're not digging through your couch and things like that. Not that everyone's money was already in a single bag, which is the phrase that was used before by somebody. But that each person has it set aside, and so when Paul shows up, they go, yep, here's the money I've got in the cookie jar or the whatever in the world. I'm going to bring it to the thing and to the people that are going to take it. Because Paul wasn't going to take it. That was weird, too. When Paul shows up, we're going to give it to someone other than Paul, but that's a different story.
But along with that is that there's a case that the somewhere remember what church it was that never going to give money. I mean, they haven't done it yet. So you're behind or whatever word you want to use there, and you need to catch up. And I'm paraphrasing.
That was Corinth also.
Yeah, but you know, and so that's a little different than the money's already there. And we're going to have Paul and whoever went with him to distribute it to the elders.
Yeah, I think you're talking about in 2 Corinthians 8 and 9 when he's saying, you guys better have that money collected up or you guys are going to look, disingenuous. You said you were going to send it and you hadn't.
If I recall, they hadn't. They hadn't completed it or something,
Yeah. I'm not sure if it flat out says they hadn't done it. But I know that Paul was questioning whether it was going to be there when he got there. So what do y'all think about the distinction of the second singular?
Of the him lay by him? That second singular?
Let each one of you lay by him. So one and him, those are the two singulars. And that making an individual act versus a collective act.
I don't know. The Greek literally does say that, but at this point, we're not Greek scholars. And so at some point, you have to become a Greek scholar. Good luck. Or you have to trust the job of the translators to interpret the scriptures well for us. And I believe they have. Although they too, at least in the English standard, they do leave it a little bit ambiguous. On the first day of every week, each of you is to put something aside and store it up. So I think what you're asking is, where is it being stored? Is everyone storing it individually? Or is it being stored in a collective pot? And I believe that's what it comes down to. And at least this translation doesn't really say, and I glanced at others, and they don't seem to elucidate any further either.
Yeah, I know that I was reading recently, Mike Willis wrote something on this and answers that question to in the affirmation that it is not saving it where you are, but I can't elucidate the argument here, so I'll make sure I bring it next time and and look over it. But I think it's important when we begin to do these word studies. And by the way, I've been doing word studies now for months with regard to the qualifications of elders. So I'm kind of sick of the word studies anyway. But that you don't set aside a couple of things that are present in the context, because it is indicating a collection. And it seems here that it's a singular collection, not a bunch of collections that will be joined together later.
Why?
Because it says the collection.
Right. Verse 3 calls it a singular gift, not gifts. Yeah. These are individual people having individual gifts.
So I think that, at the very least, that's something that would speak to that or maybe lend us to think that perhaps it's a... And the second thing is the day, the first day of the week. Why is that one chosen?
Yeah, that's when they're all together, probably. That's what I would think.
The inference is being made.
There, it's an inference. Yeah. I won't say it's a necessary inference, but again, when you look at the context, if there are two views that could be held with regard to the significance of the word him, but you see, aside from that, in the context, it is a singular collection, and then it's done on the first day of the week, that would indicate that the intent was for them to put them in the
churches.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the instructions were given to the various churches to do the very same thing.
As a collective.
Yeah, as a collective, yeah.
But as individuals.
Well, church.
Everything that is collective is done by individuals. Right. There's no other way of putting that from any type of worship that we offer, any type of work that we do. Right. We just have to differentiate as to what collective it is. If it is the congregation, and of course, third story, Dick indicated the works of the church, that there is a limitation as to what God allows for the collection of the saints that make up the Westside congregation, what they can do, and there's a difference between that and what individual Christians can do and have liberty to do. But that's the distinction that we're making. This was something that he told the church at Corinth to do. So all of the individuals had a responsibility to fulfill that command. And they did it, and they put it into a collectivity, a collection in that regard. So that's...
A point real quick that is helps germane. Anyway, one thing we need to be careful is we don't need to suspend logic. We're trying to understand what was going on back then. Let's just be logical about it. We get paid, some of us get paid once a week, twice a week, and that's usually a... Probably most of us, on a rarity, once a month.
Three times a month.
These people were probably being paid every day. If you were a laborer back then, you were paid at the end of the day. And you had money in your hand. Now, if you got money in your hand, I'm finding this with a Filipino brother. If you got money in your hand and the need comes up, you're going to spend it. Mm-hmm. So what they had to do first, all these things were going on. What they had to do first is hold something that they would have for Sunday. And then when Sunday came, they took that money and they gave it, and it got out of their hands, and it was set aside for the Jerusalem brethren. And the way, what I mean by set aside, it doesn't matter if it was a separate bag. I said bag a while ago, or if it was in the general fund and somebody kept track of the amount. Whenever the collector came, they knew exactly how much to take out and give it. They didn't give them the whole treasury, obviously, but they gave to them the amount that was collected for the purpose. So we have all that's involved, right? Does that make sense?
You can also look at how it was disseminated as well, like how it was given. It was going to be in a centrally located box or bag, and it was going to be monitored on its path to Jerusalem by a brother from that congregation, and there was going to be a certain amount to it so that nobody was able to take from that without having to, you know... you couldn't just take money out of it without somebody knowing. There was rhyme and reason behind all this, because then when you see it being given, Paul talks about it as being fruit to your account, meaning the church collected. It was fruit that was going to be, it was part of that church's work, their benevolent work. It was fruit for their account. So that applied to the church as a group, but also because of the individuals that supported it.
I'm not trying to be silly or like exercise levity here, but like, I mean, it could be something as simple as, okay, you guys are having a problem getting it there. So did the churches in Galatia. So this is what I told them to do. You know, like, collect it on Sunday. That way, when I show up, we're not trying to find Bob, Joe, and Harry who are in you know, 30 leagues away in some field somewhere, because y'all obviously, you know, it's obviously it's an ongoing thing that they're doing on a repetitive basis, and he's trying to put the groundwork for the best practice, I guess.
Charles Holt and his group in the Examiner magazine that he had that influence on, they had house churches, and one of the things that they advocated, it's not the most well-known thing, but it was that that was, again, as for a specific purpose, and the only time that we have a responsibility to give is when there is a specific need, that the weekly giving or a sacrificial giving that is done consistently and is part of a pattern is not necessary. And the problem with that is that the specific purpose of the contribution is given or collection is given in 1 Corinthians 16 is so that there would not be the need for the special collections. If a church is diligent in supplying each individual in the group, supplying cheerfully without begrudging the giving and liberally so that they will sow bountifully, then the idea of there not being the funds that are needed is less of it's not as plausible a situation as it is otherwise.
I'll tell you something that's come up in congregations is they'll look at something like that and they'll say, okay, so maybe they were collecting money like they did in Acts 2 and 4, like all things in common, or just for the needy saints there amongst them. And then there was this thing to Jerusalem, and they were collecting money there too. And they said, hey, set that money so you got it for when I show up, and I can give the dude the letter, he can have the money, he can go. And the picture that gets in a lot of people's minds is that they show up and they're like, all right, here's my regular whatever, X number of dollars for regular, and then I brought this X, or you know, Y number of dollars for the thing for Jerusalem, and that they were separate monies. And the way that humans mess that up is they go, I don't like what that pot of money's paying for, and I do like what this pot of money's for, so I'm going to put nothing in that pot of money and put some in this one and some in that one. And they end up making decisions that are really, really destructive to the church. Along the lines of something you were saying is, I've seen people point to Judas as an example of, look, here's how people handled money back then. They weren't all walking around with their own money. Judas kept the money, because that was just a logical way to deal with money at the time. And so it's not unreasonable that you would have somebody, I don't know if they had a more secure house or what the deal was, but you pick somebody and said, this is a smarter place to keep a big chunk of money.
Well, there's a practical reason for that. You know, Jesus made a comment once, and he said, is he saying this because we didn't go buy bread? If you're going to go buy bread, you need to have money. And if all the disciples have a little bit of money here, a little bit of money there, they're all going to have to go buy bread. Judas would go pay for the bread. He's got the treasure. Yeah. He's got the bag.
So we
that's
are
practical.
So we are over time. So I'm going to end class. We're, you know, mountains more to talk about. So
what are we going to talk about next time, though?
We'll come back to it. What are we going to talk about next time?
Usage.
I was thinking about looking at Luke. Describe what he was doing when he wrote Luke and Acts. Describing the purpose of Luke and Acts. And then go in and looking at the passages in Acts that are on topic. And keep it in mind the context of what Luke said. And just spoiler alert, here's what Luke said. He said, I'm going to tell you what they did. Right? He was giving a historical account. And so the good thing to do when you look in Acts is, what did they do? And that's actually a surprisingly hard thing to do. People like to say, they did this because of this. It doesn't say that, you know, focus. What did they do? And it's actually challenging. But that's what I was thinking about covering in a second.
Just very quickly, the meetings, the studies will be put up online, the members area where the for example, the men's meetings are. I'll have a page called Men's Studies, and the password, if I remember correctly, is Pursue Righteousness with no space, no capitals. Is that correct?
No, you just gave it everybody.
Huh? Well, we're the ones that are going
to
have it.
You can't get to the file that he just told the password on unless you have the password. Have
it. So anyway, let's keep it. It's for the men's meeting. It's pursue righteousness, and we can keep the same one. There's no reason to changing it. Pursue righteousness, no space, all small letters, and I'll have the audio up as soon as I can get it up each month that we have it. That way you can go and listen again, or if you're for some reason not able to come that Sunday, then maybe within the next day or two I'll have it up so you can listen in.
So I only wrote down two actions because I come from work, so you have actions after a meeting. No, I only wrote down two things for people to bring back. One was just what I said at the beginning. Everyone should prepare, come. Have read Acts, right? Read Acts 2, 4, what's another one? 11?
On this thing about this Bible study, I thought we'd have to have input from us all that what we're going to study next.
We are, but we haven't finished this. So
this is what you talk about. It just has to do with contribution. With giving.
Yeah.
Okay.
I kind of suspect giving will take 3 or 4.
Right. I mean, the way we're going, I'm surprised that that new subject alone.
No, it's not a new subject. It's just looking at Acts 2, Acts 4, Acts 11. That's where I'm going to start. Bring other passages. I mean, there's tons. There's tons of passages, right? Bring other things to talk about. Study it on your own. It'll be helpful. And then the only other thing was, Stan, you said you were going to bring Mike Willis.
Yeah,
Mike Willis's reason.
I'll find that argument on that that he made, and I'm thinking it was Mike Willis. I'm pretty sure it was, but I don't know that for certainty. I do know he wrote the commentary in the Truth series on 1 Corinthians, so I think it was him that I was reading last week. So I will share that with the brethren if I can find it. Hopefully I'll be able to.
I want to throw something out since we are going to continue on this. Maybe because we're going to be, it's going to be a month if y'all can't think about it. There was, I don't really have a dog in this fight because I'm good either way. But something was said in a recent business meeting, I don't remember what it was, and I don't know why it was said, it was brought up, but there was a mention made of a congregation somewhere. And they were considering allowing direct deposits into the church's account. As a way of making the contribution, and there was one audible gasp that I heard, and I understood, and I guess I can understand why, but that one thing alone right there really kind of touches on a lot of thinking about the contribution, and the main thing I guess is whether or not it's an act of worship. For example, it's something that has to be done within the assembly, and if we don't, we're sinning. But as a practical matter, the same thing's being accomplished. For me, my finances were saved years ago when I was able to start paying bills online, and I could say this many percent, and it came out of my pay before I could spend it.
Right.
Because I was behind on payments month after month after month, and when the internet all caught up to me, it saved me.
I know what you're talking about.
Caught
up
to my mess. But see, this is the thing.
And auto pay.
I thought about this on my own, but I didn't want to suggest it or anything, because I don't have problems with the church. But this, I think this is a comfortable setting that we can discuss something like that. But the idea being is that If I want to assign a percentage of my paycheck every week, and it goes from my company directly into the church's account, then it's not so much a matter of convenience. It's like the difference between putting cash in a check in. The brethren in Corinth didn't write checks; they didn't have checks. They put cash in. But we put checks in the plate. It's just a different way to do the money. The question is, I can specify that the deduction be done on the first day of every week. Whether it happens or not, it's outside my hands. But is that even necessary?
Checks don't get put until Monday. So I mean,
that was a debate that came up when the state was in checks.
I read a brother that said if you're paid twice a week, this is one of the men that we talk about. One someone who's been preaching for decades, and we should respect his knowledge and wisdom on it. And he said, if you're being paid twice a week, then you should split your contribution and give it every Sunday, because if you don't, you're sinning.
You're saying, if you get paid every other week, not every twice a week.
Yeah, every other week, that's wrong. Yeah, bi-weekly.
I don't even get a paycheck anymore as far as like a weekly paycheck. I have my own business now, so when customers pay, they pay when the job is done. Sometimes it's a 30-day thing. Yeah. I'll do the job 2 weeks ago, and they still haven't paid, you know. And so I get it as it comes in, so it's a different for me now.
Well, as you prosper.
It's as I prosper.
But he said you should split up what you prosper. So, see, that's just the gamut.
No. Well, talking about what you were talking about, and by the way, class is over. You can leave. But talking about what
you... Because my phone's still recording.
Well, this is in the class. What are you recording it for? No. Talk about what you were talking about. I know people who will take out of their first paycheck of the month their entire contribution for the month so that it is not in their account and isn't available for them to accidentally spend on something else. And other people say that's wrong because you should be giving each week as you prosper.
Right. It comes down to whether or not that's something we have to do. Or is it a practical matter, or is it an act of, is it worship to God? The putting, Stan has been quoted as saying, and I don't remember.
I believe it
was.
Hard worship.
But Stan was quoted as saying, putting money in the basket is not an act of worship.
He just said the opposite.
Well, he's changed his mind.
But let's be careful.
Yeah.
See, this is my other role. See, when I said I got to be an interpreter sometimes.
Maybe an inconsistency on my part. What was the context?
It was in a class. somebody had asked a question. I wasn't there.
Jim.
But it was just
Jim.
That. Putting the money in the basket itself is not an act of worship.
Are you leaving?
Okay. Well, my view is the contribution... firstly, what contribution is an act of worship, and I've been consistent with regard to that in my writings and such. And
I may have been
splitting a hair, but I don't know what the context was.
I think you were splitting a hair. If I'm remembering right, it was just the actual putting it in the basket.
The physical
act
of worship.
It's right.
Making a distinction between the physical and
maybe
and
the
purposing in your heart.
Okay. Maybe that's what I was saying.
So I have a question. We're doing this every week? Every month. Month. Okay.
It's supposed to be the same day as the men's meeting, but I completely had a brain lapse.
So, question: can we move it a little earlier in the day, like 7 o'clock instead of 7:30, since we tend to have run long?
Well, the reason we good
that
is
because
but that was the decision made because there was something being done by 7.
Oh, okay.
And
if seven was not possible, then I get it.
Thackeray was one.
I wouldn't worry too much about that because Thackeray's. The chance that he works on a Sunday is so few and far between anyway.
It seems like Bill Thackeray is the one that said I could be there
by Sunday. He probably wasn't thinking about it. He was probably thinking like...
I don't remember for sure.
Because I was thinking more like 2. I was thinking enough time to eat lunch and get back.
Especially I would prefer to have the very.
We don't usually eat lunch till 2 after...
Yeah, it's hard for me to test it.
Well, this morning is different by 2.
Kids.
Would anybody like more time than doing it on the same day as the men's business meeting? Like keeping it on a third Sunday?
I don't mean to be laughing, but we discussed all those things, and that was a part of it.
We finally decided on the men's business meeting.
That it would be best to
so
do
that
it that.
We would have a chance to almost like in real time, just if we did have something that was at the men's business meeting, we could roll it into the thing and have a chance to study it later that day.
I didn't know.
And if we had to.
There was a long discussion of what day and what time.
7:30.
I missed.
So we'll have to put pause until next month.
If there was an issue, we have to deal with.
And do some studying on your own.
Second Sunday next month.
No, it's not.
Yep. Second Sunday.